Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for Marketing Communications Today, brought to you by the good folks at West Virginia University. It's the one show that takes a look at the intersection of data and marketing with our data-driven experts today, Cindy Greenglass. Hey, Cindy, how are you?
Hey, great, Paul, and how are you?
I'm good. We got to get you got two people in the room, so we got to make you both talk into the mic and not to me there.
All right. Well, thank you, Paul. We're really looking forward to having as our guest today, Michael Lynch. And we're going to talk about, you know, has customer empowerment killed customer relationship management or CRM? So, you know, we now live in a world where companies and brands no longer have control of marketing, advertising, or even the conversations we're having with our customers. In a really short period of time, the balance of power shifted dramatically away from us as marketers pushing communications to the customer owning the communication and dictating to us how they want to be communicated, when and how. So in this new world, is there still a place for CRM or the experience economy? Are these outdated concepts? Do they need to be thrown out? Do we need to rethink it? So we got half an hour to explore all of this with Michael Lynch, with a very diverse career that is as diverse as loyalty itself. Michael comes with years and years of experience in gaming and hospitality. It's even cooler, he teaches wine at DePaul University. I have always wanted to take his class. Michael recently served as the Director of Loyalty Marketing and Market Research at Let Us Entertain You Enterprises, where he was responsible for all direct marketing efforts, including strategy, telesales, frequent diner, email, website, and the operational CRM. Since 1982, Michael has developed and executed highly successful database marketing initiatives. He received his BSBA in economics from University of Central Florida. He has his MBA from Louisiana State University. He has joined the faculty of LSU. He teaches at Indiana University Northwest and DePaul University. He is undertaking his PhD in hospitality management at Iowa State. He's a fellow adjunct instructor at WVU with myself. The man has a lot on his plate. So with further ado, Michael, welcome to our show.
Well, thank you very much. It does, you do make me sound incredibly busy.
Oh, great. Well, Michael, here's our first question for you. Help us set the stage. How would you define CRM today?
Well, at best, CRM is a system where a company can use the big data that's available to them to better understand their customers. There's a lot of information available, and technology has made it so that we're able to track customers, see their spending levels, see their activity, see their behavior. To be honest with you, at worst, CRM has turned into a Me Too sort of situation. Think of an airline that doesn't have a frequent flyer program. More and more restaurant companies are getting loyalty programs and frequency programs. Most hotels now have loyalty programs and frequency programs, and too many of them just seem to be copycats of one another, when really the heart of customer relationship management is the customer, is offering unique opportunities to unique customers, being able to identify your best customers and treating them in a very special way. An interesting thing I run across every once in a while is I'll ask an operator how they treat their VIPs, how they treat their very, very best customers. And the operator will tell me, we treat all of our customers like VIPs. Well, if you're treating all your customers like VIPs, you're really not offering exceptional service to your best customers. And really what CRM or customer relationship management is all about is identifying and taking care of your best customers in a very special way.
Got it. So if we identify, and we call CRM by the definition you just shared with me, so many companies have loyalty programs. excuse me, programs, as you said. And they have, you know, customer relationship programs. And we've all embraced this and have for, you know, the last decade. Is loyalty really loyalty, or is loyalty just a fancy name for I'm going to offer you a discount?
That's an excellent question. And really, the theory shows that there are two kinds of loyalty. One of them is called behavioral loyalty. The other is called attitudinal loyalty. A discount program is going to create behavioral loyalty. Behavioral loyalty just happens out of habit, or because I can get a small discount, or because they're offering me a little something. I really don't feel emotionally attached to the company. I don't feel like the company offers me anything special. I don't feel that being a customer of a particular company says anything about me. For example, there are people that carry Coach purses because they carry Coach purses. They want to have a Coach purse. They want people to see them carrying Coach purses. There are people that will ride nothing but a Harley Davidson because they feel that a Harley Davidson says something about them, and that it says something about Harley Davidson that they're actually a Harley rider. On the other hand, far too many customer relationship management programs really do end up being discount programs because the operators don't understand what customer relationship management really is all about. And very often an operator, just looking at the bottom line, will look at the cost associated with the discount that they're offering their members. One of the things that we look at quite often is what percentage of your business comes from loyal customers. If a very high percentage of your business is coming from loyal customers or customers in your loyalty program, then yes, you really are offering a discount program. However, if the membership in your program is somewhat limited really to your best customers, it becomes what it really is, which is an opportunity to understand your customers better and to treat them in a special way and offer them things that you're not offering to everyone else. And if you're good at it, ultimately you can take that data, you can take that information, and make very important operational decisions based on the information that you glean.
So, Michael, part of this concept assumes the 80-20 rule, which we talk about often in marketing, the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. 80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers. That's the assumption that we make, which would mean the cream of the crop or the best or the special customers are the ones you treat better because they spend more. Is that concept still work, or with the new paradigm we're in, is it much more democratized?
Oh, no, the 80-20 rule is very, very important. And it is a reality. 80% of your business, or very often 80% of your profits, will come from 20% of your customer. And if you're not identifying that 20%, if you're not taking very special care of that 20%, chances are that 20% might start looking to do business elsewhere. The biggest problem is that if you've not identified who that 20% is, when the members of that 20% start to walk away and start doing less business with you or stop doing business, then very often you don't know who they are and you don't know where your lost business is. You don't know who you're losing business from. And once you have, as I mentioned earlier, I mentioned behavioral loyalty. The other side of it is attitudinal loyalty. Attitudinal loyalty, again, it's the Harley rider. It's the fact that I have a belief that my doing business with this company says something about me, and being a purchaser of that brand says something about that brand.
Right. So I'm going to ask you, is CRM really alive or is CRM dead? And let me ask you this in relationship to what you just said. So I love Gucci. I'm a attitudinal customer, maybe a little more aspirational than attitudinal because we all know how expensive that is. Okay. But I have never seen a Gucci club, a Gucci loyalty. I've never been approached to say, you're a great customer. We want you to be part of the Gucci's or something. I mean, I, don't know what you call them, but holy cow, I would love to be part of something that linked my attitude and aspirational, and I'm wearing Gucci shoes, to a group of people who think like me that are Gucci loyal. So what do you make of that?
Well, the truth of the matter is that brands like Gucci, Tiffany, Coach, Harley Davidson, they don't need loyalty programs because you have members that are so loyal already that a loyalty program is not going to add to the level of loyalty. It really is those occasions or those situations where you have a broad group of possible potential customers, but a very small group of loyal customers, where CRM or customer relationship management or loyalty programs really work. When I was in the casino business, I came to realize relatively quickly that not everybody is going to be a casino visitor. So when I just took the market of casino visitors, I then realized that there were different levels of player, very much like when I worked in the restaurant business. There were people that would come into a restaurant only on anniversaries, only on birthdays. On the other hand, there would be somebody who would come into the restaurant every week. I'd want to identify that weekly restaurant customer. I'd want to identify that weekly casino player. On the other hand, if I ran a Michelin three-star restaurant, I wouldn't have a loyalty program because my market is so limited. I don't have a broad market of people who would be willing to spend, let's say, $500 a person on dinner. And there's not a broad market of people that are willing to buy Gucci shoes or willing to ride a Harley Davidson. However, there's a very broad market for casinos in general. There's a very broad market for restaurants in general.
So, Michael, is CRM dead in your opinion?
CRM is definitely not dead because there still is a great differential in spending among customers. And as long as you have that differential in spending, that differential in visitation, CRM is going to be necessary. It's something that is definitely going to work to the benefit of organizations. It's going to definitely drive not only the top line, but ultimately it'll also drive some bottom line results. When they would ask me what I do as the director of customer relationship management, or the director of loyalty, my standard answer was, it's not my job to bring customers in, it's my job to bring customers back.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, and so what I would do as the director of loyalty marketing or in a customer relationship position is I would work very hard to, again, identify my best customers, the customers from whom I'm getting the greatest profit, and try to grow that business. And not only that, but also try to find what we refer to as birds of a feather. If I have a great customer, that great customer probably knows people who have very similar behaviors, similar psychographics, that is going to make them hopefully a potentially great customer.
All right. Well, wow, things are moving fast, Michael, in this conversation. And when we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, and I'd like to ask you, Michael, about some of the failed programs, what we can learn from them, what could some companies do better? You know, the graveyard is littered with failed and dead CRM and loyalty programs that have gone by the wayside. So after a quick break, Michael, maybe you can share with us what did they do wrong and what could they have done to fix it?
And before we get to that answer, we want to remind you that marketing is more than just ads and press releases. It really is. Might be loyalty programs like we're talking about today. Marketing is about building relationships at the bottom line. Connect with other marketing professionals at West Virginia University's Integrate Conference in Morgantown, West Virginia, August 1st through 4th, and you can build some relationships. You can network and learn from industry leaders, speakers representing large and innovative organizations like Cisco and Facebook, as well as agencies like Compuccino and Fujikata. You can register today. It's pretty simple. integrate.wvu.edu. And after you do that, please check out West Virginia University's unique online data marketing communications program. It's the first graduate program to focus on data's impact on marketing, communications, and all the rest of the things we're talking about here. Learn innovative strategies from award-winning faculty, like the guests today, as you shape the future of marketing together. Learn more at DMC, that's Data Marketing Communications, dmc.wvu.edu. How am I doing? Am I mastering all those initials and acronyms there?
Paul, you're doing great. We might have to give you an honorary degree at DMC program at WVU.
Boy, I'd love that. I'd love that. Well, I'm fascinated. I'm just curious if you could ask the guest, give us a little bit of background. I know he's done a lot of teaching, but it sounds like he's been in charge of some loyalty programs, and I don't know that we covered all of his complete background here.
Yes. Well, Michael, why don't you give us a little bit of background on some of the loyalty programs you've designed, developed, managed? Share with us.
Unfortunately, that would take up more than a half an hour. But to put it very briefly, my first CRM initiative actually happened in 1984. I got into an argument with the general manager of the hotel where I was working as front office manager, and he felt that the best way for us to spend our marketing budget was on advertising. When I saw who was coming into the casino, not the casino, but the hotel rather, and when I saw where our business was coming from, which was travel agents and tour operators and things like that, I suggested to our general manager that we market to the travel agents and the tour operators. Well, he told me something very dangerous. He said, "Show me." And so I did. Moving forward, the second time I had a chance to work with customer relationship management was at the advent of the player's card in the casino industry. When I started in the casino industry, there were no player's cards. So taking care of customers really had to do with what the casino employees saw. They would have to either watch the players at the tables or they'd have to walk around the casino floor to identify who the good players were. So I started to work for a company called Harrah's. A small little company called Harrah's. And we grew their individual programs. And ultimately, they decided that it was in their best interest to have a nationwide program. So I was very lucky to be put on the multifunctional team that helped create what is now called Total Rewards. When it started out, it was called WinNet, but now called Total Rewards. And I left that to work for another casino company, ultimately moving from casino company to casino company, helping them to build their customer relationship program, and eventually got into the software business. And then I had the opportunity to come work for Let Us Entertain You Restaurants. They were looking for a director of loyalty marketing and market research. Their program was a bit on the primitive side. I don't think they would be for me to say that. They were doing things rather simply, and it looked a lot like a discount program. And I came in and I put a lot of the theory that I had learned in my casino life, and just to see if it would work in a restaurant.
So now that we kind of come full circle, you've had a great deal of loyalty experience. Heaven knows casinos are some of the masters of it, and we
absolutely.
They've been very successful.
Yes.
Right before we went on break, we said some are not so successful.
Correct.
Are lots of companies who've done it wrong abandoned it or almost abandoned it. So maybe you want to kind of share a little bit. We talked about the good, maybe a little bad or ugly.
Sure. In the 90s and at the turn of the century, there were, I know it sounds kind of funny to say it that way, but there were a number of companies that decided to jump on the CRM bandwagon. And they started the CRM bandwagon by taking their salespeople and telling their salespeople that they needed to write down every contact, they needed to note every phone call, they needed to track whether this was the first meeting, the second meeting, how many meetings it took to close the sale, how much the sale was, when the salesperson got back with the client. And if you know anything about salespeople, this drove them nuts.
Yes.
To them, sales was more art than science. And if they sat in their office for 7 hours a day and worked 1 hour a day and was one of the top three salesmen in the company, the salesperson saw nothing wrong with that. They were solely focused on results, on sales. Well, the new group of sales managers, because of the advent of computer and storage space and speed of transactions and things like that, they wanted to track everything. They wanted to turn it into a science. And the salespeople they pushed back and they didn't want to do it. The second iteration of CRM really ended up with corporations buying these big, expensive software programs. And these software programs were supposed to track sales and supposed to identify things. But it ended up being housed in the IT department. And so all the reports that needed to be run, all the analysis that needed to be done, all occurred in the IT department. And this information was not floating up to the marketing department, and it wasn't floating up to the decision makers. Really, the key to success in any program, but particularly a CRM program, is top to bottom dedication to it. There has to be top to bottom approval. If you don't have approval from the C-suite, it's not going to work. And that's what happened.
Great. Now, I have heard and I've read that there is larger IT budgets in the marketing department today for some companies than there is in the IT department itself.
Absolutely. That is absolutely correct. And right now, marketing is becoming more and more of a computer-driven program. And the advancements in technology, the advancements in the speed of transactions, in the speed of running analysis, and the storage space, you can store a lot more data and you can run these programs a lot faster. When I first started doing data analysis, everyone I knew that was in the data analysis office smoked. You would start a query, you'd go out, you'd smoke a cigarette, you'd come back, and you'd hope that the query was done running. I did not smoke, however, I was able to find the snack machine. And so I would run the query, I'd end up at the snack machine, and I'd be back, and where they ended up being, you know, having, you know, smoker's breath, I ended up having to keep buying new pairs of pants because it's too big. Technology really has become an integral part of this. And the beautiful thing about CRM, for you marketers out there, if I run an advertising campaign, it's very difficult for me to monetize the effectiveness of my campaign. However, if I run a direct market campaign through mail, through email, whatever, where I'm using my CRM database as the backbone of the program, I can monetize it. I can show where my profits are.
Michael, I want to ask a question a little bit, take a left turn from customer relationship management and talk about the experience economy. Okay, back 1999-ish, Pine and Gilmore coined a term, the experience economy. You know, what is it? How'd we get there? And is it relevant today?
Sure. And to put it kind of quickly, it started again about 20 years ago. And the four steps in the agreement, and I'm, you know, at the risk of plagiarizing, I'm going to use their example. In the agrarian economy, if you were celebrating a birthday, you went out, you got the flour, you got the eggs, you got the milk, and you baked a cake. In the industrial economy, Betty Crocker helped us by putting together cake mixes for us, and we just went out and bought the cake mix. In the service economy, we just went to the bakery and bought a cake. Now in the experience economy, we're going on a birthday to Chuck E. Cheese, to something, to experience something, to get an event, as opposed to just buying the component. And that's what the experience economy has become. And CRM ties very neatly into the experience economy, because when you do identify your best customers and you identify what it is that they want and how to please them, you can create experiences that are going to guarantee their loyalty. And it took 20 years for really those two things to really tie together. Now, in the academic world, there is talk that the experience economy may be on its tail end, and we may need to look at something else that's turning customers on, something else that's going to drive business into the future, because as the generations change, as the money shifts, we're really looking at, is it really experiences that are going to drive business into the future, or do we need to offer something more tangible, something that somebody can take home with them, something that people can remember by?
Well, I would say that this experience with you, Michael, has been outstanding, and we could talk about this for many, many more hours. We had a previous guest talking about the Gen Z versus millennials, and so you bring up a real interesting point. What values and interests and attitudes and behaviors are the millennials and Gen Zs going to exhibit, and how will this change, and we have to adapt as, you know, new customers enter into our businesses and our relationships. I have one last question as we wrap. You have an extensive and impressive academic background in addition to practitioner background, and it's a great honor and privilege to work with you and to teach with you. How is your experience with West Virginia University been, especially in light of all the experiences that you've had?
Well, it's been very good for me because the students give me a different perspective. None of the students come from the same background I have, which means that I'm introducing concepts and theories that they don't have 30 or more years of context. So they come at the problems at a little bit different point of view than I do. And the sharing of information between myself and the students, the sharing of the information among the students, really helps to grow that canon of knowledge, really helps to grow understanding. And to be honest with you, I am a big fan of swiping and adapting. I love to come up with great ideas and new ideas and take them as my own, and certainly don't want to give anybody credit for any of these ideas. But the students so far that I've worked with have given me absolutely wonderful ideas, wonderful direction, and it's meant the world to me. And I think I have likewise been able to give them a point of view that they have never been exposed to in the past.
Well, Michael, I wish I could take your class, especially the wine class, and I would love to take your CRM class at West Virginia University. Thank you again for your time today. Paul, I'm going to send it back to you in the studio.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network. For at-work listeners like you.